In the final stages of the Battle of Berlin, a special operation was launched by the Red Army, an operation orchestrated by Stalin himself to find Adolf Hitler, dead or alive. Soviet intelligence had a fairly good idea of where to look in the bomb and shell-ravaged German capital, and the right unit to undertake such a sensitive task, Schmiersch. This ominous-sounding unit was an extension of Soviet military intelligence, founded in April 1943, its name a portmanteau of the Russian language phrase "death to spies," and was created by Stalin himself. Its initial remit was the combating of German espionage operations within the Soviet Union, and hunting down so-called counter-revolutionaries. It was a constant presence with Red Army units and was extremely powerful and feared, being attached at brigade, division, corps, and army level. It was a part of the dreaded NKVD secret police, itself headed by Lavrenti Beria. For the Berlin operation, a special Schmiersch unit was formed and given one specific task by Stalin: find Hitler. Stalin seemed convinced that Hitler had escaped from Berlin, and he took a keen personal interest in discovering the full truth of Hitler's fate and the thoroughness of his operation, codenamed Myth, in trying to discover the truth about Hitler's fate was unknown in the West until 1968, when the Soviets first revealed exactly what happened to Hitler and his inner circle. It is because of Soviet distrust of its Western allies and the resulting Cold War that the question of Hitler's ultimate fate remained unsettled for decades, allowing all sorts of conspiracy theories to grow up in the information vacuum that resulted. Conspiracies eagerly reported by unscrupulous researchers and parroted with great effect by poorly researched television documentaries, until these theories now obscure much of the truth. This series of videos will examine the fate of Hitler from the Soviet perspective, using the interrogation and medical reports and other sources that were generated by Operation Myth and hidden from Western scrutiny for almost a quarter of a century after Hitler's death. They reveal some fascinating discoveries made by Soviet investigators that potentially change how we view the demise of Hitler and his wife Eva Braun. Real conspiracies based upon hard medical evidence. As we have seen with my series about the demise of Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler and Reich Minister Martin Bormann, links in the end screen, nothing is totally settled connecting the fates of many top Nazi leaders, and real conspiracies do surround much of the orthodox history. I'd urge you to watch these series, as they are companion pieces to this new series I'm creating, the biggest conspiracy of all, the fate of Adolf Hitler. To briefly summarize the situation in Berlin, the massive Soviet operation to capture Berlin had commenced on the 16th of April 1945 with the Battle of the Zelo Heights to the east of the metropolis. The threadbare and outnumbered German forces put up a very strong and competent defence until the 19th of April, when the battered Soviets managed to break out towards the city. Some of the surviving German divisions withdrew into the city proper to assist the garrison with its defence, while large formations of German forces became surrounded outside the city. The Red Army managed to reach Berlin's eastern suburbs on Hitler's 56th and last birthday, 20th of April. Within a few days, Berlin was surrounded and being assaulted by two enormous Soviet armies from east and south. The 1st Belarusian Front, commanded by Marshal Georgi Zhukov, and the 1st Ukrainian Front under Marshal Ivan Konev. Stalin, in order to speed the capture of Berlin, encouraged a race to occur between Zhukov and Konev, the prize being the capture of the Reichstag, an event that was intended to happen before May Day, the 1st of May 1945, a massive celebration in the communist world. Whilst all this was going on, Hitler made increasingly futile efforts to have German armies outside Berlin relieve the city, but all efforts failed. Soviet forces fought their ways steadily deeper and deeper into the city through consecutive defence lines against fanatical German resistance, incurring heavy casualties in men and armour. By the 27th of April, the Soviets were nearing the central defense sector, codenamed Z for Zitadelle or Citadel by the Germans, containing all of the massive ministry buildings and public monuments, including the battered Reichstag, and not far away, the Reichschancellery, Hitler's enormous government building where he had lived and worked while in Berlin. Beneath the Reichschancellery garden was the Führerbunker, a converted two-level air raid shelter that had become Hitler's last bolt hole, 40 feet underground, where he was safe from the bombing and shelling. The government quarter was defended by some of the best remaining troops, including some 5,000 SS from Hitler and Himmler's personal escort commands, and some foreign SS who had little incentive to surrender to the Soviets, as well as many Army, Navy, Air Force and Volkssturm units, and some of the remaining heavy armour. The Schmiersch detachment, detailed with finding Hitler, worked its way forward with the 3rd Shock Army of Zhukov's 1st Belarusian Front. On the 29th of April, as elements of the 3rd Shock Army launched its first bloody assaults on the Reichstag building and other buildings around it, elements from the 5th Shock Army were closing up on the area of the Reichschancellery. The battle for the Reichstag would last for several days as German resistance in and around the large building was extremely fierce. While German forces, mainly SS, managed to hold a shrinking perimeter encompassing the Reichschancellery and a few streets around it. The Schmiersch unit with the 3rd Shock Army assaulting the Reichstag was abruptly transferred to the 5th Shock Army sector in preparation for the assault on the Chancellery complex. Inside the Führerbunker, Hitler realized that the game was up. In the early hours of the 30th of April, he was informed that the troops defending the Reichschancellery would run out of ammunition during the night. That wasn't entirely correct, but the defense couldn't last many more days against immense Soviet pressure. Hitler had married his longtime girlfriend, Eva Braun, the previous afternoon in a short ceremony inside the bunker. According to dozens of witnesses, Hitler and Eva committed suicide around 3:30 p.m. on the 30th of April 1945 inside Hitler's sitting room, and their bodies were carried up to the shell-ravaged Reichschancellery garden and burned over a period of some hours by SS bodyguards using petrol obtained from the Reichschancellery motor pool. In the evening, the unrecognizable remains were buried in a shallow grave. Propaganda Minister Dr. Joseph Goebbels had taken over leadership in Berlin as the new Reich Chancellor on Hitler's death and attempted to organize a ceasefire with the Soviet command. Though unsuccessful, the Soviets learned, via Goebbels, that Hitler was allegedly dead. When Goebbels's scheme failed, he too committed suicide on the afternoon of the 1st of May 1945. Along with his wife Magda, after having first had their young children poisoned using cyanide capsules. Goebbels, according to witnesses, went up to the Chancellery garden, where he first shot his wife and then himself, before the bodies were partly incinerated by another open petrol fire and left unburied among the detritus and ruins. Martin Bormann, the highest-ranking Nazi leader left in the bunker, took part in an organized breakout from the Reichschancellery area on the night of the 1st to 2nd of May, designed to give Hitler's personal staff and bodyguard units a chance to avoid Soviet captivity, the bunker being completely deserted except for Johannes Henschel, the master electro-engineer that ran the structure's various pumps, engines, and so on, while the defenders of the Reichschancellery ruins were much depleted. The Soviets planned to make an assault on the Reichschancellery in the early hours of the 2nd of May, using troops of the 5th Shock Army's 9th Rifle Corps. The Soviet assault was made across Wilhelmplatz, against much decreased opposition, and a field howitzer used to blow a hole in the doors, after which Red Army troops stormed the complex, floor by floor. So, at this point, the Soviets only knew that Hitler had been reported as having died in Berlin on the 30th of April, a report that originated from Dr. Goebbels and was subsequently broadcast to all German armed forces via Radio Hamburg on the night of the 1st of May, the announcement made by Hitler's successor, Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz, now the new Reich President. The 9th Rifle Corps assault on the Reich Chancery complex on the 2nd of May was successful, and a special banner-raising unit was in the vanguard of the assault, led by NKVD Major Anna Nikolina and 4 male soldiers of the 2nd Battalion, 1050th Infantry Regiment. Nikolina had a red Soviet flag wrapped around her waist under her leather jacket, and she and her escort made their way under fire to the top floor of the Reich Chancery. They then found a staircase into the vast attic, where 2 of her escorts were killed by defensive German fire and 1 was wounded, before Nikolina climbed through a hole in the roof and, together with Sergeant Gorbachev and Private Bondarev, secured the banner to one of the building's remaining spires using field telephone cable, an action that resulted in Major Nikolina being awarded, appropriately, the Order of the Red Banner. By 6 a.m. on the same morning, 2nd of May, General Helmut Weidling, directing the final defense of Berlin, surrendered, along with his staff, at the Bendler Block command bunker. The last defenders around the Reich Chancery and the Führer bunker were Frenchmen of the 33rd Waffengrenadier Division of the SS Charlemagne, and remnants of the 11th SS Volunteer Panzergrenadier Division Nordland, made up largely of Scandinavian volunteers. Master electromechanic Henschel remained in the now deserted Führerbunker to provide electricity to the emergency field hospital in the adjacent Reich Chancery bunkers. The first Soviet troops cautiously entered the Führerbunker at 9 a.m. on the 2nd of May. Once the battle for the Reich Chancery was over, the Soviet infantry was ordered out to form a cordon around the complex. Schmiersch now took over and ordered a combat engineer detachment from the 3rd Shock Army to search the complex for booby traps and explosives. The detachment commander, Captain Sholter Sulkanishvili, was very nervous about working alongside the all-powerful Schmiersch. His detachment spent some hours combing the huge building for booby traps, but found none, only stacks of Panzerfaust anti-tank weapons in crates. In the Reich Chancery garden, near the Führerbunker's emergency exit, the sappers came across 2 badly charred corpses, shrunk in size and looking like puppets, as their commander said. Their task complete, the engineers were ordered off the site and Schmiersch troops began to search for Hitler. The detachment was under the direct supervision of Lieutenant General Alexander Vedis, chief of the Schmiersch Directorate, 1st Belarusian Front. He in turn was under great pressure from both Beria and Stalin to find Hitler, and his job wasn't made any easier when Pravda, the Communist Party newspaper, prodded by Stalin's urging, published on the 2nd of May an article declaring Hitler's reported death to be a, quote, fascist trick. Stalin seems to have believed that Hitler was still alive and had somehow escaped Berlin. When Marshal Zhukov, the front commander, tried to visit the Führerbunker on the 2nd of May, he was turned away by Schmiersch. They said it was too dangerous. And he was also refused access 2 days later as well, demonstrating just how powerful Schmiersch was and how it wanted no distractions as it combed the Reich Chancery and environs for evidence. In the meantime, quite a number of Hitler's former staff had been apprehended trying to escape from Berlin. They were taken to the Reich Institute for the Blind in Oranienburg for detailed questioning by a Major Beistrov of the NKVD. Stalin also sent an NKVD general to supervise these interrogations. This general was given a secure telephone line to Stalin at the Kremlin and would update Stalin following each individual interrogation. Stalin was very much part of the hunt for Hitler in real time, and everyone involved could feel his eyes upon them. The corpses discovered lying in the Reich Chancery garden by combat engineers on the 2nd of May were suspected to be those of Goebbels and his wife Magda. Examination in situ by Schmiersch revealed the male corpse was wearing a leg brace, Dr. Goebbels being partly disabled. And fragments of his party leader's uniform, a golden party badge, and other items were recovered from the corpse. His charred head was also quite recognizable as Goebbels. 2 Walther pistols, both fire damaged, were recovered near his body. On Magda's corpse, a silver inscribed cigarette case was found, as well as Hitler's own golden party badge that he had given to the loyal Magda only a few days before his own death. Three German witnesses were brought to make formal identifications of the Goebbels. Vice Admiral Hans Voss, Grand Admiral Dönitz's naval representative at the Führerbunker, who had been captured the night before attempting to escape from Berlin. SS Chief Garage Mechanic Hans Schneider of the Reich Chancellery Motorpool, and Reich Chancellery Cook Wilhelm Lange. All made positive identifications of the Goebbels. Schmiersch then placed both corpses onto a door and loaded them aboard a truck and drove them to Schmiersch's new headquarters at Plötzensee prison. On the 3rd of May, Schmiersch discovered the corpses of the poisoned Goebbels' children lying in their bunk beds in the upper bunker, and removed these bodies, along with that of General Hans Krebs, the last chief of staff of the German High Command, who had shot himself in the Führerbunker in the early hours of the 2nd of May, along with the corpse of General Wilhelm Burgdorf, Hitler's chief army adjutant, who had likewise shot himself. Later, Dr. Goebbels's chief RSD bodyguard, who had been captured trying to escape Berlin, formally identified all the corpses. The corpses were next taken to Berlin Buch Hospital, where a team of highly trained and very eminent Soviet pathologists had been assembled, and each corpse autopsied. Samples were taken from organs, stomach contents, and sections of lung, liver, spleen, and kidneys. Blood samples were also analysed. All the bodies, except that of Dr. Goebbels, contained glass splinters in their mouths from SS-manufactured cyanide capsules, confirming the cause of death with the available witness testimonies. Goebbels had died from a bullet wound to the right temple, again tallying with witness testimonies. Back at the Reich Chancellery, Schmiersch continued to search for Hitler and his wife. Schmiersch asked Vice Admiral Voss where Hitler was. He hadn't witnessed Hitler's suicide or cremation, but whilst being part of the bunker breakout on the night of the 1st to 2nd of May, Hitler's adjutant had told Voss that Hitler had committed suicide and had been buried in the Reich Chancellery garden. Schmiersch therefore drove Voss back to the Reich Chancellery in a jeep. It was now the evening of the 3rd of May 1945. Schmiersch officers took Voss down into the Führerbunker, the electricity now switched off, using handheld torches to light the way. Voss was visibly nervous and muttered, in German, unintelligible things under his breath. The party climbed up to the garden via the bunker emergency exit, emerging at about 9 p.m. They stepped up to a large dry water tank, originally used for firefighting purposes. It was full of dead bodies. In the torchlight, Voss suddenly exclaimed, pointing to one corpse, and saying, "Oh, this is Hitler's body." A brief examination of the body was made under less than ideal circumstances. It was that of a middle-aged man wearing a dark suit and sporting the same hairstyle and toothbrush moustache as the Führer. His shoes were missing, and the Schmiersch officer in charge, Klemenko, noted that the body was wearing darn socks. Would the Führer have worn darn socks? Klemenko didn't think so, but decided to return in daylight and examine the corpse in more detail. The following morning, Klemenko and his section returned to the Reich Chancellery, only to discover that the corpse identified by Voss had been moved. Klemenko eventually found it laid out on the floor in one of the Reich Chancellery's shattered halls. Six German witnesses were shown the corpse. Five said that it was not Hitler, one said that it could be. Due to the superficial resemblance to Hitler, the corpse attracted a lot of Soviet attention and was photographed and filmed in situ, the cause of death seemingly a bullet hole in the middle of the forehead. It looked as though the man had been executed. Subsequently, many have suggested that the body was a certain Gustav Wehler, a Hitler double, and that he was executed and his corpse planted near the bunker to help cover the real Hitler's dramatic last-minute escape from Berlin. The problem is, the manner of this unidentified man's death bears no relation to the circumstances of Hitler's death that were recounted by dozens of witnesses, both to the Soviets and also to the Americans and British quite separately, a story they stuck to for the rest of their lives. We might suggest, as indeed Schmiersch thought at the time, that the man had a superficial resemblance to the Führer. But then again, many German men grew toothbrush moustaches in honour of their leader. Klemenko was taking no chances and asked that a Soviet diplomat who had met Hitler come and view the corpse. According to bunker witnesses now in Soviet hands and being ruthlessly interrogated at the Reich Institute for the Blind, Hitler and his wife were burned and then buried in the Reich Chancery Garden. This was where Klemenko focused his attention. Just outside the bunker emergency exit, Private Ivan Churukov climbed into a nearby crater that was strewn with burnt paper and discovered a pair of charred legs sticking out of the soil. Klemenko's men excavated the area, exposing two badly burned corpses of a man and a woman. At this point, Klemenko was still awaiting the arrival of the Soviet diplomat to view the corpse that had been found in the water tank. Unsure what he had actually found in the garden, Klemenko ordered the burned bodies to be reburied for now. At 2 p.m., the Soviet diplomat duly arrived and immediately dismissed the body found as not being Hitler. Klemenko returned with his men to the Reich Chancery Garden early the next day, 5th of May 1945. The two buried corpses were disinterred and each placed in a wooden Soviet ammunition crate and photographed. Interestingly, the unburned bodies of two dogs were found close by, one a small black dog, the other an Alsatian bitch. The corpses and the dogs were taken by truck to Berlin-Buch to be autopsied. Klemenko was certainly optimistic. He had been looking for the dead bodies of Hitler and Eva Braun that, according to many German witnesses, had been buried close to the Führerbunker emergency exit. The Soviets knew that Eva Braun had a small black dog, and of course Hitler's Alsatian bitch Blondie was well known. Klemenko had found the burned bodies of a man and a woman and the bodies of two dogs that matched the witness descriptions. It was now down to the pathologist to decide if these were indeed the bodies of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun. But despite an extremely thorough investigation, the final autopsy reports reveal some really startling problems with the identifications, based on hard scientific evidence. Problems that would be hidden from the world until 1968, and which many researchers, even today, continue to argue over.